this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Burl Love, editor of The Enquirer. Back with me in the co-hosting seat is Casey Sloan. Hello.
Hey, long time no see.
I know. But, you know, our listeners should know that you are, if you're not co-hosting, you are behind the scenes.
Yes, I am.
On the podcast, making things happen, helping to book guests. Yeah. Anyway, we have a very exciting guest this week, someone who has not been on the podcast before, but there's no way you haven't been in contact with his work. And that is the one, the only Charlie Frank, the executive director of the Reds Community Fund. They always have a lot going on, but in the summer is when they do their community makeover. They're going to be in Winton Hills. And so we're going to talk to him about the Reds Community Fund, the makeover, the other things that they do, because they do a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think people even realize.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Until you kind of like list it all out, the impact that they have in the community, especially when it comes to youth and keeping kids plugged into the game of baseball, which is important to me. I'd hate to see, you know, it's still called America's pastime.
Yes. Yep.
But is it really? You know, how many kids are playing baseball compared to back when I was a kid?
I know. I also feel like it's so competitive now. Youth sports are very competitive in that way. Like, it's all travel. It's not
now, you
just
were on a softball
fun.
Team, right?
I was. But I was very much like, I didn't really play competitive travel softball until I got into eighth grade high school. So my childhood years, it was real slow pitch at a local like ball field. It's very normal.
Very normal. Yeah, that is true. We didn't have that dynamic as much. I mean, there were still like select teams and things like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was still the era of if you liked sports, you played baseball in the summer. You might play soccer,
to do something,
play football. But it's like at early ages, kids almost are having to pick to specialize.
Yeah.
You know, and man, when I see like the gear that baseball players have now as kids, like I had a nephew that played for Molar.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like $1,000 bats and gear bags and, you know, you should have seen the rickety equipment we played baseball with.
Oh, trust me. I had the same. I think the most kind of similar gear that I had at one of my softball tournaments, I got my helmet airbrush to say my name on it.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's like the coolest gear I had. So,
well, before we bring in Charlie Frank, one of the big stories that has emerged this week, at least for me, was the closing of Bar LeBeuf, or the Beef Bar in English, which was the last Jean Robert restaurant.
Yeah.
Remaining after his death several years ago. So, of course, you know, we took the opportunity not to just report on another restaurant closings because, you know, restaurants open and close all the time. But it was kind of a significant moment, I thought.
Yeah, and I've never gotten to eat there or even experience it. So what have your experiences been there?
So it... Bar LeBeuf was in kind of like a funky location at the bottom of an apartment building, you know, Edgecliff, I think, out there off Victory Parkway.
Okay.
But nice little view of the city from the windows there. And interestingly, another legendary media personality, the one, the only Eddie Fingers from WBN and now WLW, actually lives in the building. So when when I went to the last time I was at Bar LeBeuf, he and his wife were having dinner at the bar, and I didn't even realize they lived there. So that was like their building restaurant. They just would like roll downstairs and grab a bite to eat. But you know, it was a classic Jean Robert restaurant. You know, French influenced, high quality. You know, we won't go through the whole Jean Robert story here, but, in a nutshell, you know, like the quick and dirty, he arrived in Cincinnati to be the head chef at the storied Maisonette, which was the, you know, the restaurant, you know, the Cincinnati French restaurant. If you had a special event or anniversary or something like that, you wanted to get fancy and have a, you know, white tablecloth experience. You would go to the Maisonette. And then he started branching out on his own, opening different restaurants. He reopened a French restaurant called Pigalle's, which is right on 4th Street around the block from where we are here. But, you know, he had all kinds of little restaurants, including the French Crust at Findlay Market. So he brought elevated dining to Cincinnati at a time when there was a kind of rebirth in the downtown area going along with it. Okay. The early days of OTR coming back, you know, buildings being retrofit into condos and people starting to move back downtown, you know, which we kind of take for granted now that, you know, a lot of the buildings that were once offices or factories, like I lived downtown across from the Shillitoe's loft. Shillitoe's used to be a department store that got converted into lofts. And across the street was Shillitoe Place, which was an old shoe factory, which was a cool old building. So, I mean, he kind of caught that wave and helped the city get its downtown mojo back.
Okay.
It didn't help. I mean, it didn't help. It helped greatly that he was a big personality.
Yeah.
You know, he had the French accent, right? The big crazy hair. He would show up at charity events and cook. He was just, you know, super willing to be interviewed and be out there. So, so I think it's a quiet moment of passing for the community that the last Jean Robert restaurant.
I was also going to say, was it kind of like a surprise or a shock almost, since it was like the last remaining one?
You know, I don't think people are too surprised because, you know, Jean Robert has always had business partners to work on the business side. And he was notorious in a good way for wanting to focus on the food and the experience. I remember the story. I don't know if it's a true story or if it's now one of those Jean Robert myths. But when he was opening Pigalle's, he had his investors and backers in, and they were kind of looking at the financials. Apparently, one of the line items in the budget was the cost for linens. And so one of the investors said, man, there's a lot of money you're paying for linens. You know, maybe you could just use paper napkins. And his response was something like, oh, and while we're at it, let's get plastic plates and spoons, you know. And so he would get his way.
Yeah.
But, you know. But it's a tough business, and he's opened and closed a lot of restaurants. So was it a shock? I don't think it was a shock.
Okay.
You know, again, challenging location, and, you know, everything sort of has its time. But, yeah, so with that little melancholy look back at Jean Robert and the closing of Bar LeBeouf, we will now move on to baseball.
Yes.
Another Cincinnati tradition, and bring in our special guest, Charlie Frank. Special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. As promised, we have with us in studio Charlie Frank, the executive director of the Reds Community Fund. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be with you guys. I'm really excited about it, and I'm digging your view.
Yeah, yes. It is a remarkable view. I can't believe we haven't had you on until now. This is the first time on the podcast. What do we say? Long time listener, first time guest.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you listen every week.
Tuning in.
I certainly do listen. I've listened quite a bit over the years, so I'm very honored to be with you guys.
Well, we're honored to have you. We know you're a busy person. We're going to get into a lot of things, but one of the reasons we thought this was a great time, because here at the Enquirer, we're all about news pegs and urgency, is you're in the middle, the Reds Community Fund, I should say, of a lot of things right now. But coming up, you have one of the most, I think, I would say high profile and high impact events coming up, and that's the community makeover.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. This is year 17, and we actually began back in 2010. It was just P&G and the Reds, and we were very involved at that time at the Jacobs Center, which is the CPS campus that used to be the Cincinnati Academy of Physical Education, CAPE, back in the 70s and 80s. Yeah, right off Winton Road. We had operated there for 5 years before our Reds Youth Academy opened in Roselawn in 2014. So we were indoor and outdoor there, and we brought about 100 P&G staff over to help us work on Brandon Phillips Field, which we had just opened. And with P&G's help, we took a deserted ball diamond right on the corner of Winton and Dutch Colony and converted it into a really nice softball field that is still utilized heavily by our RBI program.
I drive by it a lot.
Yeah. And then added the next year, added a T-ball field there. So that was back in 2010. And the next year in 2011, we went to North College Hill and we built a new ball field there, a new baseball field with P&G. And in doing so, we found out from the North College Hill leaders that they had an abandoned elementary school building that they were looking to convert into something else. And it piqued P&G's interest, and it piqued our interest, and we ended up putting another 100 volunteers towards the building and painting on the inside and cleaning up the inside and converted it into a community building that ended up housing the police department. And I think that year we realized this thing has a lot of potential indoor and outdoor. And it has it made it to Avondale in 2013, which kind of turned a page as we started working in the city. And it's been everywhere from the West End to South Cumminsville, Lower Price Hill, Roselawn, Evanston, back to Avondale. We went out to Lincoln Heights. We've been to Madisonville. And then most recently, I had a great project in the Walnut Hills community last year. And we're back in Winton Hills this time. And now that we're back in Winton Hills, it's with the Cincinnati Zoo, Cincinnati Children's, Kroger. So we've got a lot of partners that have made this really extraordinary.
So what is the project in Winton Hills?
Winton Hills will include a tremendous amount of work at Winton Hills Academy, which is a CPS K-6. We're going to be working at the Winton Hills Recreation Center with Cincinnati Recreation Commission. The Winton Hills Community Council has taken over a church across the street from the school, so we're helping them convert that into a community center. We are doing some work over at Jacobs Center, so working on those ball fields. And then one of the wild cards this year is we're partnering for the first time with the Cincinnati Metropolitan Housing Authority, and we are working on a rebuild of a basketball court at Winton Terrace, at one of their two communities in that neighborhood. And local artist Brent Billingsley is creating a mural on it. The community is going to help us with it, and we're really excited about that new wrinkle.
How do you guys determine the locations and areas that you're going to make over?
You know, part of this, the beauty of it is it's very organic. Mm-hmm. So for a while we had an application process, and all that created was more work for our volunteers. We've gotten to know the community well enough that we typically have one or two projects sort of under construction before we make a final determination. Mm-hmm. I sweat about this every year. Where are we going to go next? Because it feels like every year we take on more. There's something unique that we want to duplicate. You know, sometimes the ball fields are a big piece of it, mm-hmm. kind of given my connection and my employment with the Reds Community Fund. It needs to be, but it's grown so much beyond that. But to answer your question, it is... it's organic. I mean, what community in Cincinnati wouldn't benefit from having these corporations, from having this cash and in-kind infusion, to having this opportunity to maybe get ahead of the line a little bit? And so we do that ourselves. It's a leadership group that really consists of the Reds, P&G, and the Zoo that are then making recommendations to the rest of our partners.
Okay.
Talk a little bit about how, if someone wants to get involved next week when you're in Winton Hills, can they just show up? Do they have to sign up? Do you have a hard time recruiting? I mean, I should say a hard time, but is it, you must need a lot of volunteers to pull off what you guys have.
Yeah, this typically takes 400 to 500 volunteers. And because we've added the CMHA as a partner this year, they're going to be bringing about 100 more. So kind of the counterintuitive piece of this is, you know, we need to make sure that all of the volunteers from our partners are thoughtfully utilized and deployed and safe, because we have a tendency to find one of the hottest and most humid days of the year, typically in late July, early August. Not that we don't have plenty to choose from.
Who doesn't want
to
be outside, you know, running a weed whipper and painting?
That's a big piece of this. Now, I mean, we also have indoor activity. We work with Shoes for the Shoeless and Toys for Tots and a lot of other community partners to provide activities and resources for residents. But we've had to tell the residents, you need to kind of give us the space next Wednesday and Thursday from a liability standpoint, from a coordination standpoint. I mean, we just need to be extraordinarily careful. When we were in Lincoln Heights back in 2022, we asked the community to help us beautify the area before and after. Mm-hmm. When we were in Bond Hill in 2024, it was very similar. You know, we were rebuilding Bond Hill Park and asking the community to kind of help us before the day of, and but to really give us space and support, you know, when all of our volunteers were there. We need to keep it safe and coordinated, like I said, for all the folks that are already there. We have a lot of these volunteers that come back every year and that tell us it's one of their most meaningful days of the year. So we try to figure out ways to meaningfully engage the community while kind of keeping the sanctity of the 2 days around the makeover relatively clean.
Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit, because one of the things we like to do when we have guests like you, and who doesn't know about the Reds Community Fund, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing not a lot of people know about Charlie Frank. How did you get involved with the Reds Community Fund? What's the backstory? And how long have you been at it?
Well, this is my 23rd season, which is hard to fathom.
Is that how you refer to it in baseball parlance? Not years, but seasons?
Oh, I'm just trying to make myself feel even more tenure than just saying I hit my 22nd anniversary in March. But yes, 23 seasons. And, you know, these, no matter what part of the business you're in, these seasons are really demanding. I came from the NBA, so I spent 11 years working with the Minnesota Timberwolves, initially through radio and TV, and then ultimately took on more communication work. And when I left, I was responsible for the team's foundation and community relations arm. And my wife and I, who were both from Cincinnati, moved back because we each had a parent that was ailing. And she's a veterinarian, and she had a great situation at the University of Minnesota. And I loved literally every second living in the Twin Cities and working for the Timberwolves. So it was not an easy decision for us to come home. And for her, it took her about a minute and a half to find work, because she's an emergency vet. And even though I had built up a nice resume and some fabulous connections in and around the league and the community up there, it's tough to transition to another market.
Especially a non-NBA market.
Especially a non-NBA market. And I had a lot of help. I had a lot of people that spoke out on my behalf, and it took a couple of years to settle into this role. I worked for part of that time with the group that ran the Anthony Munoz Foundation and then the Marvin Lewis Community Fund, and that was a tremendous honor. Anthony's foundation just celebrated its 25th year of doing extraordinary work here in the area. So I was proud to be a part of that. And, you know, this opportunity, the Reds Community Fund, began in 2001. And I was their first full-time hire in 2004. So, you know, it really helped to have someone minding the shop. And then, you know, 2 years later, when the Castellinis purchased the team and their ownership group came in, it really, it changed the complexion altogether. They invested so heavily and so authentically in this work. You know, within a year and a half, they had tripled our budget. Bob himself said, look, you know, unwind your endowment. You're not saving the arts. You're trying to help kids. You're using our game to connect with the region, and the game needs help, and kid, you know, and the kids certainly need our attention. So, you know, I want you to spend every penny that you're raising and go out there and do good work, and we've got your back. Wasn't said quite that way, but that's how I've received it. And they've been phenomenal to work for, because they do care so much about the community. They're at everything that we do, and they take such pride in the work that we've been able to accomplish together. So that really changed things in 2006 and opened up every door that hadn't been opened previously. And Phil Castellini said, you know, before we got here, you know, the community fund, you were tolerated and now you're supported, you know, and celebrated and embraced. And I'm like, that's true. Mm-hmm. It really is. So, and then we opened our youth academy in 2014, you know, literally on the shoulders of the greats like Joe Morgan and Frank Robinson, and Joey Votto and Jay Bruce and Brandon Phillips. And, you know, so that kind of pushed us to another level, altogether. And the community makeover, I think, really, in many ways, showcases what this ownership group intended to do when they bought the team. Baseball and softball need our leadership. They need our attention. They're worth it. They're games that, you know, teach life in a unique way and that don't require you to be the biggest and the fastest and the strongest. And our industry needs to know where the next generation of fans is coming from. But above that is the fact that, you know, not only a professional sports team, but this professional sports team in this city, in this region, has an enormous amount of ability and influence to do good. So how can we do good? And I think that's where the community makeover has come in.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I observe as a person who grew up in Cincinnati, moved away and came back, was the elevated stature of the Reds in terms of their involvement in the community. In fact, without dropping, you know, without calling out other professional sports franchises in the community, it seems that no matter how the team is doing on the field, you have up and down years, there's this feel good aspect with the Reds, mm-hmm. Which I think is directly related to the fund. What's it like carrying that responsibility for the organization?
Oh my goodness. It is such a privilege. 'Cause like you, I grew up here and worked away and came back. So you have that different perspective, but I came from a Reds family. I mean, my grandfather was a season ticket holder and a believer, you know, for decades. And my earliest memories were literally, you know, being at Crosley Field with him and my dad. Don't remember that too clearly, but certainly, you know, the Riverfront years and growing up in the 70s and not even understanding how lucky we were as fans to be able to watch that greatness unfold and not just greatness on the field with Rose and Bench and Morgan and Perez, but the greatness in the front office. I mean, Bob Housem, the guy's not in the Hall of Fame. They shouldn't be a Hall of Fame. I mean, what he did to assemble that team, but to, you know, the Reds were drawing 2.6 million fans as a true regional draw before that even was a thing. And they did it by being thoughtful, creative, engaged, you know, and, you know, so those are my earliest, not sports memories, those are my earliest life memories. And they've, you know, been with me, you know, everywhere I go. And the older I get, you know, that love for the team has never waned and the love for the community, you know, like all of us, it cares so much about this community and want to see it thrive and want to hopefully be in a position to respond to some of its needs and challenges. And now, you know, being in a position where, you know, these two, you know, central themes of my existence come together. It's been the opportunity of a lifetime.
You mentioned the Youth Academy. You're also involved with Cincinnati Public Schools. And I don't think a lot of people are aware of that, at least not, you know, your close circle, I'm sure. But what do you have cooking with that?
Well, I've been on the board. I joined a board about 20 years ago of a new nonprofit called Student Activities Fund, the SAF, and it morphed a few years later into becoming ABC, Activities Beyond the Classroom. And for the last 15 years or so, despite the challenges of COVID and you know, the challenges of being a small nonprofit, it took on a remarkable mission of trying to level the extracurricular playing field for every school. There's 66 schools, as you know, part of CPS, and there are about a half a dozen of them that are thriving and healthy, you know, the Walnut Hills and Clark Montessori's and Hyde Park and Kilgore. And, you know, so about a half a dozen SCPAs that are really unique that have financial support and some connection to affluence. And there are roughly 60 that don't. And as I became more and more involved with activities beyond the classroom because of the natural connection that I had with the Reds and the Community Fund, and was so appreciative of their support of youth baseball and girls softball, you know, I started to realize that there are very few nonprofit missions that resonate with me as much as this one, which is, you know, if you provide an extracurricular activity for kids, whether it's athletics, whether it's theater and music, marching band, chess club, whatever it is, the kids that are engaged have attendance numbers, have GPAs, and have general college readiness that spike upward at a remarkable level. I was fortunate enough to attend Walnut Hills. My parents did. My children did. I'm proud of that connection to CPS. I'm also eyes wide open that Walnut Hills is an outlier. Mm-hmm. It has resources that most public schools nationwide don't have. But Walnut Hills can do a lot of good, you know, through its influence in the city for sure. But, you know, so I had the experience of being involved in a lot of extracurriculars, as did my kids. At schools where that isn't possible, you know, I am very motivated to make those opportunities more accessible. So I've been very much about this mission. Most recently, ABC is morphing into becoming a Kid Future CPS. So we're evolving from simply being a programming arm to being a fundraising and nonprofit arm and partner of the district. And as you both know much better than I do, the existential threats to public schools in our state right now are unprecedented. You know, the challenges that are taking place at every CPS board meeting are unprecedented, and they break my heart. And I'm sure, you know, and the more that I get to know the folks that are, you know, working in the administration of the school district, I'm convinced I've never seen more difficult jobs. The day-to-day decisions they need to make when the funding is rapidly decreasing. So, you know, we're trying to fill a need at this ABC, now Kid Future CPS, where not only can we help provide kids with you know, more extracurricular experiences, but now we're getting into the guts of what can we do to help the 34,000 kids in our district, and what can we do as a community to recognize the fact that there is no logic that explains why Cincinnati has the second highest childhood poverty rate in the country, when we have the Fortune 100s that we do, when we have the generational nonprofit philanthropic work that goes on here. These pieces don't add up. So we're not going to solve that, but we certainly want to be a piece of the equation, a piece of the puzzle, especially at a time right now when the school district is facing unprecedented challenges.
When you get out in the community for the makeover, is it within the framework that the work needs should benefit youth? Is that the?
Yeah, 100%. I could talk to you for hours about the work that P&G and the Cincinnati Zoo do to make this event thrive. Mark Fisher, who's now the chief operating officer at the zoo, who's one of my heroes in life. He's just so smart and so unafraid to lead, and so imaginative. And when we were in Avondale in 2020, and it turned out because of all the challenges of 2020, we stayed in Avondale to do work in 2020 and 2021. I remember his rallying cry was, you know, we're going to positively impact every child in this neighborhood. We worked at the Boys and Girls Clubs. We worked at South Avondale Elementary and Rockdale Academy. We worked with the zoo at other parks within the community. You know, we worked at food shelves. We did a, you know, the Boys and Girls Club there over on Washington Avenue. There was a mural over at Rockdale and Harvey Park, and we upgraded that outdoor green space. You know, Mark's vision was, if we complete the work at these six sites, there's no chance that it won't benefit some of the kids, all of the kids here, and positively impact all the families. And that's sort of been the rallying cry ever since. How do we touch enough partners? For example, this year, we were just going to focus on four sites, and I ended up attending a community council meeting back in February and heard the fact that, hey, you know, if you're up in the north part of Winesti Avenue, closer to Findlater Gardens, you're going to miss the whole community down by Estee Avenue and down by Winton Terrace. You know, what can we do? You know, and from a logistics standpoint, I think the rest of our team are terrified of what I'm going to bring to the table every year. Hey, guess what? We have these new wrinkles. And they all say, hey, we love the new wrinkles. Could you bring them a little earlier so we could just plan accordingly? And they've been wonderful with that, because that's kind of a niche that I have with it, is to try to find the right partners and pieces and then try to get the heck out of the way so, you know, all these other partners can do the heavy lifting. But
I think that's a remarkable sign of leadership, that you have mm-hmm. your staff unsettled like that. would you agree with that, Casey?
Yeah. I would agree with that, yes.
So what other, for those unfamiliar, you know, the community makeover, you just recently wrapped up your annual auction to benefit the fund. What are some of the ways fans, supporters can get involved, you know, activity-wise or volunteer-wise to support the fund?
Yeah, it's a great question. Let me start on the fundraising side of that. You mentioned our telethon and MLB auction, which took place Thursday, July 9th, set a record for us, which was remarkable because it was a 1-0 game that barely went 2 hours. And usually we're hoping for a 3-hour game. The night before the game
went like... The pitch clock's your enemy now.
It yeah. is. That's right. The night before we had the John Party concert post game, and that game went like 3.5 hours. And yeah. he didn't get on stage until about 11. And they wanted that game to go fast. They wanted ours to go slowly. But, you know, that's the thing about baseball. You just don't know what you're going to get time-wise. But that telethon was a great fundraiser for us. You know, I think a lot of Reds fans are probably familiar with our 50-50 raffle, where like just about every team in mm-hmm. not just baseball, but in North American sports that has really used that fundraiser to our advantage. We've got an incredible team that run it at a high level. And the great thing about it is you don't have to be at the game to play and to win. What we've learned is it's nothing wrong with sweetening the pot in order for, you know, to encourage people to participate. Mm-hmm. You know, we might send tumblers out as a thank you gift, you know, on Giving Tuesday. You know, we have these great packages, part of our telethon, and Beryl, it does include a bobblehead, so I know it caught your interest.
I mean, as an avid collector, you kind of like forced my hand, right?
That was the goal. You know, another fundraiser that we host every June is our Red Legs Run. This year we had mm-hmm. 3,500 walkers and runners, you know, kids and families of all ages that get to finish any number of events on the warning track inside the ballpark.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember when it was called like the Red Legs Run for Home back in the day.
Yes, that's right. Those were, boy, you're dating yourself. We did one.
I know.
The original Red Legs Run for Home was at Riverfront at Synergy Field.
And you know what? I think I did both, because I think the last one I did because I wanted the opportunity to run on the field of the new ballpark. So, yeah.
I would have, you know, willingly severed off a finger to get on that horrible turf at Riverfront. And now, you know, I that's part of the job, you know, with a lot of our pregame guests and ceremonies and activities is being on the field for a lot of the games pregame. And I'll have people ask, you know, does that ever get old? And the answer is never, ever, ever.
Never.
It's such a beautiful vantage point. It's such a privilege. For the many people that may only get on the field, you know, once in their lifetimes, it's a memory they'll take with them forever. So, yes, finishing on the field's a big piece of that. You know, we have our traditional golf event. We'll have a poker event the Sunday before Thanksgiving this year. That's been part of Reds Fest forever. It's a really neat thing. You know, we do a lot of traditional nonprofit fundraising, a lot of door-to-door, asking. And now we're trying to build an endowment to protect our academy. So we've set a $20 million goal over 5 years. So we're literally just at base camp now, trying to climb that hill. And, you know, so that financially, for people that care about this game, that believe in the life lessons that the game teaches, and that understand how we've aspired to use the game to do good in the community, you know, if you go to reds.com/telethon or reds.com/community, you have opportunities just to donate there, and every penny is appreciated. And if you're someone who wants to get involved in the game, we offer umpire clinics at the Youth Academy. We run a number of different level of baseball and softball programming at the Academy. Some of that's specialized, you know, so we're really looking for people that have experience in the game. Some of it isn't. The younger age groups, of course, it's, you know, it's appreciated, but, you know, people that know how to run a practice, people that know how to organize and motivate kids, and people that know how to communicate with parents, which oftentimes is one of the hardest parts, mm-hmm. There is space for you with the Reds Community Fund. People can learn more there either by going to reds.com/community, or you can go to reds.com/academy and find out more about the programs and opportunities there.
All right. Well, I don't know how people wouldn't be inspired after listening to all that.
I know.
At the very least, people, please split the pot when you go there. I mean, and true story, my wife is a split the pot winner.
Oh, congratulations.
And I believe she might. I'll have to get with your people to verify this. What's that?
She might have the best luck ever, because she also won a, wasn't that the, it was the SPCA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's got a good lucky streak, but this is sort of a dubious honor for a split the pot, because, and again, I want to check this, it might have been the smallest, the smallest pot in the history of split the pot for two reasons. One, this was back before you made the pot a series pot.
Correct.
It was a single game pot.
Yep.
And we were there in one of those wet, rainy, cold spring games where there was nobody in the stands.
So she won half of about $1,700.
Just about, yeah. I think that's exactly right.
Well,
but still,
you know,
she won.
Yeah,
split the
exactly.
pot. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't retire. You know, we didn't buy a vacation home
a
with that
dinner.
Or anything like that. We did get a tax form. Thank
yes, you
very
did.
Much.
You're welcome. yeah, like you said, now we've extended it so that it's by series. We do the opening day jackpot that we market for more than a month. So
yeah,
that one grows to be a healthy six figures.
Wow.
And then, you know, it's like anyone playing the lottery. Once they see the numbers high, you pull in everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, teams do it differently in terms of how they seed the pot, and it's all on the up and up. But, you know, and a lot of it involves some actuarial risk, which, again, I keep out of. That is not my lane. But yeah, going series by series, I think the fans have adjusted to it. I mean, even if it's a Friday night game ahead of a Sunday draw, initially when we made the transition, some would say, you know, I'm not going to bother. Most of them don't care anymore, because people know you don't have to be present to win.
No, you can.
And yeah, go online. All you have to be is 18 years of age or older and in the state of Ohio when you play. So as long as you purchase a ticket at the ballpark or in the state of Ohio, you can do it on the app, do it on your, you know, do it online. And the cool thing about it, there's always a jackpot going. So, and then we're giving away early bird prizes and 3-for-1 pricing and really trying to keep it interesting so it's fun for people to play, even if it's not right on the brink of pulling a winner.
All right. Well, with that, Charlie Frank, Executive Director of the Reds Community Fund, thanks for coming in. I'm inspired. I'm ready to, like,
I'm too, yeah.
I was also thinking that, you know, I a couple summers was an umpire.
Were you really?
And this was in Forest Park, and we had like 1 hour training, you know, that the rec commission did that put us through, and they gave us a book, and they gave us, you know, our mask and stuff and a little pitch counter, and that was it. I was woefully unprepared, not for umping the game, but dealing with parents yelling at me.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I must have been 14, you know, and man.
Yeah.
But I would have really benefited from.
Oh, yeah.
Or you can come out of retirement.
Oh, no, no.
Oh, I would love to see that.
You know, and you, when you were 14, you know, think of how it's changed dealing with parents
yeah.
Today. It is a different world. The games are different. And we're, you know, that's one of the things that we're trying to do is keep it at a neighborhood recreational level so that not everything is some expensive select experience. But yes, for umpires, they are sorely needed. I was same thing. I was a teenage umpire. I remember some coach afterwards begrudgingly paying me the $10 and saying, well, at least you were inconsistently inconsistent.
Oh, no.
And I took that as a badge of honor, actually.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Charlie, thanks again for coming in. And best of luck with the community makeover, July 23rd. Tons of people involved. And we'll be out there, I think, to tell the story. So.
Well, you guys always have been. So Burl and Casey and Phil, appreciate you guys having me here. And
of course.
Look forward to seeing you in Winton Hills next week and at the ballpark often as well.
All right. Thanks. All right. So once again, we thank Charlie Frank for joining us today. So Casey, it's been a while since you've been behind the mic here.
Yeah.
You are always working on
something
interesting, something a little offbeat. I mean, that's the nature of what you do for us here.
Yeah.
You're great at digging some of those stories out. And you were telling me a little bit ago that you got to explain this to me.
Okay. Yeah. So basically this video on TikTok went viral. It has like 1.2 million views.
Is it Erling Haaland?
No, but he's also been on my TikTok for you page.
He's been in
lot.
Everyone's feed.
Yeah, he's Has funny.
I know. Anyway, I didn't mean to.
No, interrupt. I was rooting for them. But anyway, so Kelly Finglass, if you don't know who she is, she's the director of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. She's been on their Netflix series, yada, yada. Her daughter, Samantha Finglass, just moved to Cincinnati. And in true Cincinnati fashion, she took her mom to try Skyline Chili because she never had it before. And she got a five-way. That is what she ordered, which kind of bold for your
first
meal. Yeah,
not a good first Skyline experience order.
No, and I get a Cholito. I'm a Cholito girl. That's my go-to.
We're gonna have to talk to you about that, but go on.
So anyways, you know, she's eating this huge plate of five-way in front of her. And it was kind of funny because she looked at it, she twirled it, and she was like, I can't ask for one of the spaghetti twirler spoons, like she was joking. And then she took a bite and she's like, what kind of spice is in this? Is it Cuban cinnamon? Which kind of surprised me that she was able to get
the
cinnamon.
Yeah, no, she's close to the profile for sure.
Yeah. So then she continues eating it. She's like eyeing it a little bit. And then she's like, it's just, this is just fraternity boy food for sure. She's like, this is man food, but it's good.
Oh, okay. Now, I've heard many first-time descriptions, you know, first-time Skyline descriptions when people are trying to figure it out. You know, like, this isn't real chili, you know, what is this, meat sauce kind of thing? Because they're expecting, you know,
like
Texas-style chili.
Like,
what is this, a pile of cheese? You know, that kind of thing. I've never heard it called frat boy food.
Me neither.
What even is a frat boy food?
Me neither. Or man food.
Man food.
What
even is frat boy food? Like what?
Beer?
Like, did she just invent a cat beer? Beer and Doritos.
Yeah,
like, beer and pizza. I mean,
Cincy Light. Like, yeah.
And is that a pejorative or like a? I guess in her mind it was, but
yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Now tell me again, why should I care about this person?
She is the director of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders.
Okay.
Yeah. She's been doing that since she was 27 years old. She herself was a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader.
And you said she has a Netflix show?
Yeah.
Okay.
It is America's Sweethearts, Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah. It's coming back. I've never watched it.
Me neither.
Okay.
But I knew who she was.
Well, I mean, anytime, you know, someone comes in and has something to say about Skyline,
I'm going to know.
Yeah, you are on that. It's a very important part of our coverage plan. You know, we're
honestly
not all serious all the time.
No.
We like to report on what people actually talk about, you know.
But to call it man food, and I feel like it is because of the five-way. because of her order.
Yeah. Like, I think the starter order is a three-way and a cheese coney.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah. Not a Cholito. Come on now.
To be fair, I only started eating Cholitos actually after I moved back here from Tampa. I do not know why. But that was my first meal back, and I was like, I love these.
It's kind of my go-to if I know I'm going to have to eat while I'm driving.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to manage a cheese coney. Yeah, it is easy. It's kind of self-contained. But I'm still kind of like a purist when it comes to Skyline.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, now they have chicken chili. They introduced salads years back. You know, the fries with chili or cheese or both, you know, which is good, right?
Yeah.
You got to evolve, change or die, all of that stuff. But I don't go to Skyline for a salad, right?
No.
I go for the classic three-way.
Yes, exactly.
Or four-way or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to the Fountain Square Skyline.
I know. I have not been to that one yet.
Come on.
I wrote about it, so I know.
Okay. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is. You just got to go in there. I'm proud of them. Like, you know, like, good job, Skyline. Like, first of all, why weren't they on Fountain Square?
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they moved into the old, what was Rock Bottom Brewery.
It was like
and then became March 1st,
yeah.
You know. And I walked in there just to check it out first. And then I went and ate lunch there with a friend. But when I went to check it out, I learned a couple things. One is, if you want carry out, you actually go into a different entrance.
Oh, is it the one kind of by the Mi Cozumel, like around the backside
Yes,
of it?
Yes. So if you walk through that little tunnel
that
takes you from Fountain Square to 7th Street, I think. And it's pretty cool. You walk in there, they have a counter, but they have all these like self-service touch screens.
Oh.
Because one thing I noticed, someone walked up for carryout and they said, oh, we can get you here, but next time we have this great, you just walk through here and whatever. So I think that might be confusing for people, but they have like a store, you know, like a swag gear store, and they have a giant kettle in there that like they would use to make the chili that they've cut the back of it out. And so you can take your picture standing in a chili kettle.
It's like
kettle.
The Jeff Ruby's bathtub.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so Cincinnati, so Skyline.
It is. Have you been to the other one that opened in Covington?
I drove by it. I have not.
I haven't been in it either, but I drove by it too.
But that, yeah, they make that look like a 50s diner or whatever. So, and that's a nice story too, because we had reported a year or so ago that the Covington location might be closing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that location on, I guess it's, I don't know, is that 4th Street maybe, where the Waffle House is.
And yeah.
Riverside Pizza, I think. That just little hole in the wall place with, you know, no drive through, little hard to get in and out. And they moved into the former Frisch's, and not just moved in. Like it is.
They totally changed
big,
it.
Big, bright, and colorful. But back to Fountain Square, two things that were hilarious to me. One, there's a bar.
Yes.
Now they don't have their liquor license yet.
Yeah.
But so I'm used to having Skyline after I've been at a bar.
Yeah.
Not at a bar.
Yeah. Like it's not like, at the same time.
So I don't know how I feel about that. The verdict is out because they haven't opened it yet. But also, some of the things that real average people do with Skyline, like make Skyline dip or like use it to top potato skins.
Yes.
Put it on top of pizza. Like there's been collabs like Dewey's Pizza and others have done Cincinnati Chili Pizza. They fully embraced that counterculture and have co-opted it because you can order a Skyline pizza.
Yes. And they have mac and cheese bites.
Mac and cheese bites, the potato skins.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked the manager, I don't know if she was the manager. She looked important. one of the managers. I said, so tell me a little bit about why you guys decided to do pizza. And I thought the answer was going to be, well, you know, the culinary team at Skyline and the strategists and the marketing people have been, you know, developing this idea for a long time and quietly testing it. And now we feel like it's the right time to go into the market. None of that.
Of course.
You know what the story is?
People like it.
No. Like we said, they moved into March 1st, and March 1st had pizza.
Oh my
right?
gosh! So they just had the pizza.
They
oven.
Had the pizza oven. And they were looking at saying, well, do we rip it out or do we just leave it here? And they decided, well, let's leave it here. We don't want to pay the money to rip it
That's
out. And
hilarious.
It's a very nice pizza oven. What are we going to do with it? You know? So we'll just make pizza.
I wonder what that means for the Dewey's pizza, though, like their collab. Like, is the pizza Dewey's also?
I can't remember who, like, if Dewey's was a Skyline collab or just a Cincinnati style. But I think those are, like, occasional menu items or specials.
Yeah.
I would have to look at the Dewey's menu. But yes, here I was expecting some kind of, like...
A very PR answer.
Yes. No, or a very, like, corporate strategy type answer. No.
That's
like,
so
well, we had
funny.
The pizza oven. Might as well make some pizza. So
that makes it
there
better,
you have
almost.
It.
Yeah.
See, Casey, I'm not just an editor. I'm an in-depth investigative reporter, too.
Yeah.
Well, should we wrap this up?
Of course. Let's do it.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
And finally, if you value local journalism, hard-hitting stories like Dallas Cowboy cheerleader person...
Trying Skyline
trashing
Chili.
Trashing Skyline Chili. But we do important stories, too. If you love local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access, now is your time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer for new subscribers.
Thanks again and see you next week.